freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Beard has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Good morning, everybody. It is Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN, Seattle, 710sports.com. Hope you're having a good morning. We are over at Seahawks HQ to speak with Chris Carson today. Can't wait. Brock, I...
Good morning, buddy.
I'm nervous about how this is going to go.
Why?
Because I've been sort of just staring at him each time I've seen him.
Right.
I've never met Chris Carson. We've never really talked to him.
Oh, yeah. So. Yeah, not on the show. No. I did. You know, he's got one of those things I... sometimes like on women, and that's that little stud in the nose. He kind of rocks that little earring in the nose, which just kind of gives you a little like, yeah, I got a little flair here.
Okay.
I got a little something. I got a little juice. You know, don't just
a nose stud.
Yeah, he's got a little. I don't know if he's gonna be wearing it this morning.
But I appreciate the heads up.
I don't know if he's going bro tank. I don't know exactly what he's gonna do.
Well, I'll just say this:
or sleeveless hoodie.
If I was built like him, I'd go bro tank. Like, personally, I only wear shirts with sleeves, even short sleeves, whatever.
Yeah.
If I was built like Chris Carson, perhaps a bro tank would be more in the cards. So, looking forward to talking to him at 8:30. We will discuss J.R. Smith, the world's biggest idiot, probably at 8 o'clock this morning, I promise. And the Mariners with another sweet win, man. They find a way. And just Wade LeBlanc has become my second favorite pitcher on the Mariners. Not close. He's my second favorite pitcher to watch in this team. He's more fun to watch than Marco, more fun to watch than Leek.
Mm.
He's more fun to watch than Felix.
Yeah.
He's my second favorite starting pitcher in this team to watch.
Behind Altuvilla.
Well, he's not a starter.
Yeah.
A starting pitcher.
Gotcha.
Thanks.
Gotcha.
What's going on with you this morning? We're going to sit here and make fun of J.R. Smith.
I'm so mad at this article.
And when we tried to do it on Lydia's show on the Blitz.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I called him J.R. Smith there, but it was before that I said we're talking to Rashad Penny.
Right.
Yeah, just kind of a mess.
What's going on with
you? Well, yesterday was a long day. You start making fun of maybe J.R. Smith. Be careful about making fun of another man's calamity.
Are you just so upset about Steven Ruiz?
I am. This thing really fired me up.
So explain.
I was up real late last night and trying to figure this out.
Steven Ruiz writes for USA Today for the win.
Yes.
And that headline of the column yesterday is the Seahawks' new offensive coordinator is saying all the wrong things.
Right.
Which is funny because we've been sitting here going, man, how great this is. Don't you love how Schottenheimer like really wants to run the ball? Running the ball is great.
Yes. Right?
Like, this is the Seahawks getting back to their identity, and they drafted a running back, and everything they're doing is about getting back to who they are and taking the power back and this, that, and the other.
Right.
And he hears things like, cut 10, where he's talking about how important the offense is in the running game in it, and thinks that this is a bad thing.
Obviously, the running game, being physical, play action pass, but obviously here it always starts with always protect the ball. You know, the ball is number one. If you don't have that, again, you're going to hurt your chances to win. But we've always been best places I've been. We were able to run the football when people knew we were going to run it. We could throw the football when people knew we were going to throw it. And that just gives you that balance that you need to be successful.
And so Steven Ruiz says, hey, you wanted Daryl Bevel gone? Careful what you wish for. We're in 2018, he writes, and Schottenheimer is stuck in 1988.
Yeah.
Passing is king in today's NFL, and it's king for a reason. The stats show that running success has little to do with team success.
Right there. I mean, just those two sentences as fact, and people are running with this. Seahawk fans are running, you know, are running with this emotionally. And, Mike, this is not just about this article. This has been a years and years and years debate for you and I. I mean, it's at the very central core of so many arguments we've had with so many people nationally, and that is this is going to be a team that will be committed to being balanced and running the ball, period. They're going to run the ball. They're going to run the ball. And because of it, Russell's not going to have 4,000-yard seasons. Well, then he's not a top-10 cornerback because he doesn't have 4,000-yard seasons. You know, this is a passing league. And no, it's not. This team was at its very best. When it ran the ball. And it will be at its very best, and Russell will be at its very best when they do what? When they run the ball. And I literally went down a rabbit hole. Maybe that's why I've screwed things up early this morning. I mean, till midnight last night. And I went through Schottenheimer's stats with the Jets. I can peel off any numbers you want, you know, to kind of counteract any of this. But let's just start it right here. The stats show that running success has little to do with team success. How can you possibly write that in the NFL when the top 8 rushing teams last year, 7 of them were playoff teams. And by the way, the Jacksonville Jaguars were broke at quarterback. Broke. And were on the precipice of going to the Super Bowl for one reason alone. Because they ran the ball. And Kyle, play that cut, please, of Shoddy at halftime of a New York Jets game that they also put into this piece to try to kind of diminish him and make him sound just, you know, like an old school dumb football guy. This was at halftime, and I heard a lot of coaches, and I guarantee you, if we had halftime speeches of Jacksonville last year, multiple occasions, in their offensive philosophy, it would sound just like this.
Let me tell the offense something. All right, we're going to come out, we're going to run the ball every snap until we make a first down. Come off the ball, hit somebody in the mouth, and play Jet football. That's bull.
That's it. Yes, that's exactly what you want to do. And he goes on to say, Seattle was historically bad at running the football in 2017. Yeah, they were. That's why wholesale changes have been made. They also have one of the five or six best quarterbacks in the league. Yes, they do. The offense should be built around Russell's skill set, not some outdated belief that imposing your will with the running game wins games. I find this patently absurd. When you run the football, you do what? You put Russell Wilson into play action pass. When you run the football, you put a defense and you burden a defense. When you run a football, you put an extra guy around the line of scrimmage to open everything up. When you run the football, Mike, and this is where I think some of the analytics here in football are going to be challenged, because how do you possibly break apart this chain of events here that goes 5, 6, 7, 8 deep? How do you do that? Because if you do, in this case, and you try to break them apart with, well, this just run game efficiency, or you just take one link out of that chain, it doesn't tell the story.
Well, there's another big part of this as well. I agree with every single thing you just said, but let me add something to it. Pete Carroll's vision for this offense, and he has stated it explicitly from the day he got here, is run it and get chunk plays through the passing game.
Correct.
There's a very specific formula. It is not run it.
No.
That's not the vision for this game. And whether Schottenheimer says he wants to be able to run when they know it's coming or not, that's true. But he's not saying they want to run 75 times a game and throw it 5.
No.
He's saying, and this has always been the case, and if Pete were here, if we were down here to talk to Pete instead of Chris Carson, I feel reasonably secure in speaking for the coach, because this is what he has said to us on numerous occasions. The game plan is simple. Run it and get big chunk plays through the passing game. How do you get those big chunk plays through the passing game? Through play action. How does play action work? You have to be able to run the ball in order to make play action effective.
It just all fits together. And I don't want to bash these guys and Robert and Evan.
Am I right about that?
You're 1,000% right. To me, there's just no debate about that.
I need the affirmation.
I'm going to pour 3 hours of love into
give
you.
Give me some affirmation. I need some.
Mike, you are such a good football mind.
Thank you.
Yes, you
I need
are,
that.
You are really
actually,
a
actually, I just want credit for remembering what Pete Carroll once said.
Yes.
That's all. Just credit my memory for remembering what Pete Carroll said.
Let me go back and pay a few things off here so I'm not just kind of ranting there. So I went back and I looked at Schottenheimer, because I believe Schottenheimer with the Jets was asked to do a little bit of what Bevel and Cable were asked to do in the Seahawk offense, and that's possess the football, that's score points, and that's not turn the ball over. So in this piece where Klemko rips the total yardage numbers of where Schottenheimer has been in his career, 25th, 26th, 20th, 16th, 25th, 23rd, right? Oh, man, he's a bad coordinator all these years. Well, do you know where his Jets teams were, by the way, in time of possession? How about 10th, 9th, 9th, and 8th? And by the way, with Mark Sanchez. Mark Sanchez, who can't play in this league, he got him to play at a top 10 level in that way. How about points scored? 18th, 17th, 13th, 13th, 9th, 8th. In some of those points scored. So scoring points, possessing the ball, not turning the ball over, the things that he was asked to do with Mark Sanchez, they did. And further, the only success the Jets have largely had for 2.5 decades were the years when who was calling the plays? When who was playing an offense off of a number one defense? It was what Schottenheimer was asked to do with the Jets there. So yeah. I just, figures don't lie, liars figure, and you can spin these any way you want. And I'm very confident that I could put an entire piece together to just categorically take apart each of those stats with the stats that I want. But my eyes tell me, my football mind tells me, everything in my being tells me that Russell and this team will be best if they run the ball, they control the ball, and then they hit their shots and play action off of it. That's the plan for 2018.
And I don't know whether Brian Schottenheimer is going to be a good coordinator or not, but if he's not, I don't think it's going to be because of the philosophy. It may be because he's a bad play caller, he's not a good communicator, I don't know. We'll wait and see. I mean, he may go the same route as Daryl Bevel when it's all said and done. But to judge him right now, yeah, I'm not going to do that negatively. Not yet. 7:10, time for Need to Know.
need to know. The voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Well, Mariners now 5-2 on this homestand after they get back in the win column last night. They beat the Rangers 6-1 and end up splitting the four-game series. D. Gordon, man. I think they missed D. Gordon more than we realized. Just seeing him return from the DL last night and pick up right where he left off. Leadoff triple in the first inning. Scored on essentially a deep pop-up to second base. The right fielder took it, gunned it home. I thought he was out every second of the way until the umpire waved his hand safe. And even after that, I said, well, that's going to get overturned on replay. He's definitely out, right? Then they showed the close-up. Nope. He's just that fast. Absolute energizer bunny. You saw it even in the infield and the chatter he had with Healy and Segura. Yep. And those guys giving each other grief. Great to see Nelson Cruz hitting the ball again. Huge home run for them. That was just a good, solid Mariners victory.
Yeah, and you get the split in the series. You don't lose a series at home. And beyond all of that, Mike, the bullpen got their opportunity to get right. And they did. Pazos was once again nailed. So do you read that number, by the way, with the Mariners brass that they send out and do such an excellent job? Pazos has not given up a walk in his last 18 appearances.
Wow.
And he got to a 3-0 count. He took a little breath last night. He stepped off that mound.
Came
and
right back.
Ended up striking out Mr. Odor to end that inning. So nice to see the bullpen. Nicasio, his fifth good outing. I mean, that's the group. They're going to play a lot of close games in this month of June. That's the group that's got to get right, and they got right last night.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
LeBron scored 51 points, but it wasn't enough to overcome his teammates as the Warriors beat the Cavs 124-114 in overtime last night. They take game one of the NBA Finals, but nobody cares about the 51 points or all the other stats or even really the result. What was interesting? J.R. Smith, because he forgot the score at the end of the game. I watched 23 seconds of that basketball game. No joke. I turned it on with 23 seconds left. Let's go. I timed this perfectly. I'm going to see how this whole thing ends. And never in my wildest dreams would I have expected such a moronic thing to occur in game one of the NBA Finals. It would be like forgetting the outs in the World Series.
Yep.
It's could that happen one time in the middle of a game? Sure, of course these things happen. In game one of the NBA Finals with 4 seconds left? Shocking. But not, because it's J.R. Smith and it's the NBA.
And it's exactly what the NBA wants.
They love it.
They are reality TV. We say this about sports all the time. What you need to know is we've probably said on this show and on this station that sports is the best reality TV there is 100 times. And the NBA has gone all in, has jumped in with 2 feet and said, yes, we are. And we're going to rival the NFL, and we're going to be a 12-month-a-year sport, and we're going to blow up everything, and we're going to make everything bigger than it really is in the trade deadline and the offseason and free agency and the draft. And oh, by the way, our product as well, with some of the game's greatest stars. And LeBron was a man-child last night. One of 6 guys in the history of the NBA to put up 50 or more in an NBA Finals, the only one to lose, because when your teammates don't know what the score is, it's hard to win.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
I got some stories.
How does he not know the score?
I can't wait
to hear Brock's stories. We'll do that at 8 o'clock. Seahawks wrap up another week of OTAs in Renton today. We're out here to talk to Chris Carson. We'll be right in the middle of the running back battle in camp. Found myself thinking, and we'll discuss today, who do I want to win that battle? If I could choose a 1,000-yard runner, do I want it to be Chris Carson, who looks like a freight train right now every time you see him in practice? Do I want it to be the rookie, Penny? I don't know.
Pro size?
McKissick? I don't think it's going to be either of those
Mike
two guys.
Mike Davis?
I think the great thing here is it doesn't matter. Whoever succeeds, you're just going to end up being happy. You got to have a running back having some success, and I think their running back room looks really good right now.
Yeah, and there's Field Yates yesterday that had some of the details, and we'll kind of talk it up and clean it up with the professor here in just a minute about Brandon Marshall's contract as well. It turns out it is a 1-year deal, a league minimum deal for just over 7 figures, and then the other chunk of $1 million is all built on incentives and escalators with catches and touchdowns, game played, and everything else that you would hope a deal for Brandon Marshall at this stage, a guy not wanted by anybody else at this stage of the game, gets a 1-year, very incentive-laden deal. And if he produces, he'll make a couple $1 million. And if he doesn't, then he probably won't be a Seahawk too long.
All right, those are three things you need to know every morning, of course. We do that at 7.
Bro, he forgot the score.
It's amazing. Biggest blunder since Chris Webber, says the text.
Yeah, I think so.
In basketball, yeah. Probably true.
I mean, Cano did it on the base pass in a regular season game.
Plenty of baseball players have forgotten the outs during a regular
Zunino
season game.
Zunino forgot the count the other night.
Right. Like,
I mean, he thought he walked.
We saw it. McCann forgot that they're on the triple play the Mariners turned this year. He started running back to the dugout.
Yeah, these things happen. You always see a guy forget the outs. I remember Trout Nixon throwing a ball into the stands after the second out, but not on that stage.
This is 5 seconds ago.
No, that's just
this is 5 seconds ago.
That's lock-in time, man. That is lock-in.
And you're at the line looking at the score.
I know. It's really remarkable that occurred. It is one of the strangest things I've seen in sports.
Was that written into the script, Howdy?
Was that written
into the NBA script as well? Let's have a player forget the score in the final seconds so that can be talked about ad nauseum for 4 days.
Let's talk to the professor.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Saul.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. And the price is only going to go up.
Brought to you by Divorce Lawyers from N.com.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus, a wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Saul.
Good morning, John.
Good morning.
All right, so we're over here today. We're going to talk to Chris Carson at 8:30. Looking forward to that. Which would be better news for the Seahawks this year? Chris Carson runs for 1,000 yards or Rashad Penny runs for 1,000 yards?
Either one. Doesn't matter. Whoever can get 1,000 yards is going to be the key. And Chris Carson, I think, is capable of doing it. Had he not gotten hurt last year, he was on pace to probably do a 1,000-yard season. And so, I know that that we had a big debate when we were in draft day because I kept on saying that I think Chris Carson's going to be the opening day starter.
Right.
I'm not saying that Rashad Penny's not going to eventually start, but I still think that Chris Carson has to be beaten out. And right now, he looks great, and Penny looks great.
What do you think Chris Carson was feeling that night of the draft? As he was out here, the OTA or the offseason program phase one had begun, so undoubtedly as jacked and ripped as he is right now, he's out here running, he's lifting, and you know, he's in his hotel room, more than likely apartment, and you know, maybe watching that draft. What do you think he thinks when this Seahawk club takes a running back in the first round?
I can't think he's not surprised. I mean, he's got to be not surprised because I think you look at the situation, and I mean, he was a 7th round pick. I know that they had a 4th round grade on him, but when you're sitting there for 6 rounds and then you get picked in the 7th round, I think you come in not with just a chip on your shoulder, but the idea that it's like, okay, there's going to be probably somebody out there trying to replace me. And I think that you saw that with Thomas Rawls gone, that they needed to add one more back. So I don't think he was surprised at all, but I think the big thing for him is how he's responded, by how hard he's worked in this offseason. It shows in his body. I think it shows in the way that he's running. And right now, I still think he has the slight lead.
Your database got a little update yesterday as the details of Brandon Marshall's contract comes out. What do you see?
Well, the key was it was only $90,000 guaranteed. He got the minimum salary of $1,050,000, and then everything else is all incentives. So it's going to count, you know, about a little bit above, you know, 1.1 or so under the cap. But I think it was a deal that, as he said, he didn't have much else, and so he came in with all the incentives to try to do well. I think it gives the team the opportunity to see where he is. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out, and they just move on. But I think it, you know, he now has the incentives, and I think he cares enough that he is going to work hard enough. I mean, you can see that he's had the 2 surgeries this off season, or he had it last year, mm-hmm. and he's in the recovery process, and I think he can do good things.
You see this article here, John, in USA Today, ripping Brian Schottenheimer and the Seahawks for hiring him. Have you seen this yet?
I didn't see this one yet.
Steven Ruiz wrote it, and we have also seen some other folks. Joe Banner, the ex-GM, is saying that, you know, basically Schottenheimer's not any good and that he's never had any success. And the point of this article is to say running the ball is stupid and that in today's NFL, if you can't throw the ball for a ton of yards, you can't be successful. What do you make of all that?
I don't get where the idea is coming from because, again, you can see there's an increased amount of clout if you can run the football, and you need to be able to run the football. If you look at the teams, you know, like Dallas and Ezekiel Elliott, look at Jacksonville. When Jacksonville went to a championship game, adding Leonard Fournette and Tom Coughlin coming in and pushing the running style. Coughlin, of course, being the executive, kind of going through the ropes. So now I just don't agree with that. And I'm kind of surprised that people are just taking shots at Brian Schottenheimer.
Yeah, I think more than ever, John, and especially with the limitations of the CBA in practice, your ability to win the line of scrimmage when you want to win it. And that's really what he was saying is, hey, you know, in those moments of goal line and short yardage and third and, you know, third down and one, when you have to win that line of scrimmage, the team that does that more often wins. And I don't know. Sean McVay gets a lot of credit for Goff and everything else that they did as a passing. They were a run team. They turned around their entire program, in my opinion. I don't know if you agree with it or not, by getting their first round pick, Gurley, to be everything they imagined he could be, because they became a run first, everything built off of that foundation.
And not just run first, but of course what they were able to do is get a lot of motion off the running plays and use that to the benefit of the offense. No, I think that and you can see in the last couple of years there's been some really good backs that have come into the league, and I think there's an importance of running the football. I mean, I think also what you're seeing, and I think Brian Schottenheimer is on top of this, is that you also need to throw the ball to the football. Yeah. This team was, I think, last in the league in getting attempts to running backs coming out of the backfield. In fact, I mean, they rarely threw a screen pass. I mean, what it took them until about maybe week 10 or 11 to really get J.D. McKissic in there to catch a couple screen passes. And so that's not going to be the case with Brian Schottenheimer. I think he's totally up to date with that.
Yeah, I still wonder about them with the screen passes. Brock and I had a conversation about this a little while ago, and whether or not Russell's mobility is, and I'd be curious to see some sort of study on this, whether mobile quarterbacks don't have as much success with screen passes because the defense is already a little bit nervous about somebody escaping the backfield. Mm-hmm. And so even when they have a free shot coming towards the quarterback, they kind of tense up a little bit and take their time because they're always on guard for that escape. And so the screen pass maybe isn't as effective for those teams.
I tend to disagree because, where you can see a guy can move around like that and even go back into the few times that they threw some screen passes last year, particularly the ones that J.D. McKissic, a lot of them were just the few of them were Russell Wilson kind of running to the right or running to the left and, you know, kind of flipping the ball out. And I think you have that option, and it really puts a defense at a very tough position, because now, I mean, you're worried first right about Russell Wilson, and then second, now the ball's downfield and you've got less guys out there to tackle the running back catching the screen pass.
John, aren't you just thankful for Salk, though? I'd really like to pray. Today is going to be a praise Salk. Aren't you thankful for Mike Salk?
You should be very thankful that I'm biting my tongue right now.
Yes.
Let's do the wild card.
Time now for the wild card.
What wild card?
Mr. Professor Clayton?
Yes, are you thankful
for
Mike Salk?
It's time for Fan Fiction Friday.
Are you thankful for Mike Salk?
Am I? Oh, yes. I am.
No, I'm talking about Howdy.
Howdy?
Oh, yes. I am.
Okay.
John Clayton is a werewolf tormented by his lust for blood when in human form, but his complete disdain for it when in wolf form. After falling in love with a college professor played by Sandra Bullock, Clayton realizes that he must find an outlet for his bloodthirstiness while keeping his identity a secret from Sandra and her curious 12-year-old son played by Boy Howdy. Can Clayton keep up this lifestyle, or will he be forced to live out his days as a lone werewolf?
No, I think I'm going to have to live it out as a lone werewolf. I mean, but first off, I'm going to do everything possible to make sure that Sandra does not find out that I have this bloodlust. I mean, that's got to make sure that that doesn't happen. Mm. We also got to make sure that we do the right way of raising our 12-year-old boy, Howdy.
Right.
And so I just have to, you know, put that aside and just concentrate on being the good guy as opposed to being the evil
guy. So hard to do when you have that bloodthirst. Like, can you imagine what it's like to have bloodthirst?
No. No, John, did you ever have a crush, by the way? Like, growing up, 70s, 80s, was there an actress? Was there a star out there that you kind of had a little crush on?
Yeah, I think Lonnie Anderson was one.
WKRP, Cincinnati.
Yeah, I get that. Used to watch those reruns as a kid.
Yeah.
All right. I understand where you're coming from.
All right.
All right, John, have yourself a great weekend. We'll look forward to talking to you on Monday.
All right, sounds good.
All right, John Clayton with us every single day at 7:15. And, of course, his show's at 10 o'clock. Danny, Dave, and Moore, he'll be on with those guys right at 4.
You know who forgot the score in games was Lonnie, though. I mean, Lonnie, if you were to have a character in sitcoms through the years, WKRP
in
Cincinnati.
What's her name, WKRP? I can't remember it.
Oh, the text voice is going to
let you know
quickly.
I don't remember her name in the show, but
love that show. I love WKRP.
That was a fun
love
show.
Love Venus Flytrap. Yeah. Love Herb.
Yeah.
Love Les Nessman, Johnny Fever, the whole gang of them.
That doesn't get the credit, right? We think of Three's really Company and a bunch of other shows, Family Ties. From that era, that's Cheers. But that was
it's awesome. It's a funny show, man.
Jennifer Marlowe.
Thank you, Jennifer. All right. Yeah, Jennifer. Yeah. Hey, the Mariners get back into the win column yesterday, Brock, and they did it with something that is almost unfamiliar to us. It's next on Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
Baby, if you ever wondered whatever became of me.
So,
I'm living on the air in Cincinnati. WKRP.
Text message, WKRP doesn't get enough credit. Who out there is giving credit to 80 sitcoms anyway? It's a good point. Brock, who out there is doing something?
Wow,
thing?
Me.
It's Brock, apparently. We're not getting
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
It is one of the great themes and a funny show. All right, it's Brock and Salk. We're down at Seahawks facility today. Talk to the great Chris Carson. He'll be with us an hour from now. We'll talk about his year, and I want to know what he's been doing in the offseason, why he looks so rocked up and all that. So that'll be kind of a fun conversation here at 8:30. In the meantime, Brock, what a night last night. Great to see the Mariners get back to it and find a way to win. A nice, easy one, right? 6-1. You get the big home run from Nelson Cruz. You get D. Gordon back, and I think – you know, there are times where a guy like D. Gordon exits the lineup and you're just like, oh, okay, well, it's fine. Gordon Beckham maybe isn't contributing all that much, but whatever. And it's not just that you were getting Gordon Beckham. Mm-hmm. It's that you weren't getting D. Gordon. And as much as I love the triple, because triple's sweet play, start off the game and you see his speed, the play that I think really points it out is cut six. This is why D. Gordon is different from everybody else.
Swinging, and he pops one up into shallow right field. Coming in is Mazzara. He's there to make the catch, tagging Gordon, heading home. Here's the throw to the plate on the fly, down with the tag. Chirino safe and home is Gordon. Head first slide, he got the left hand in there. The throw was an outstanding throw by Mazzara. Chirinos, the catcher, got to it on the fly. Down with the tag. Gordon safe at home.
It couldn't have been more than 150 feet from the plate when he threw that ball. Riz is setting that up as if, okay, oh,
shallow fly ball.
Not going to bring
he's
in the run.
He's called a pop-up. Yes. It's just a pop-up.
And then all of a sudden, Riz looks, oh, my God, the guy's running. What's he doing? He's going to get pegged at the plate. Oh, my God. He's safe. I'm watching
well,
that
at least
play.
That's what's in his gut and in his mind. That's not necessarily
I know that's not
how
what he said,
out,
but that's what it sounds like if you could just translate the tone of his voice.
Correct.
I mean, I'm watching that game, and I would assume most people are like me there. You're watching like, hopefully now with one out, you find a way to get it done. He's certainly not going to take a chance with one out. Maybe if that was the second out, you give it a shot.
Yes.
But all of a sudden, he's running, and as the ball's in the air, I'm like, he's out by 10 feet. This isn't even going to be close at the plate. Right?
Yeah, and actually when they showed a replay, it was kind of cool. They showed a ton of replays. But there was one shot with the Rangers guys like in the infield, and you could see them all like raise their hand. Like,
they pumped a fist like, got him!
Yeah, but just like the first base call. Like, oh, he's out.
As I saw it live, I said, oh, he's out. Yeah. And then when they waved his hand safe, I said, oh, well, they're probably going to overturn that on replay. Stupid replay. And he is definitely safe, and it's all the acceleration, man.
Do you remember when we slow-mowed Boy Howdy's 40 time down here? We're at the Seahawks facility.
That was hard.
And we just, like, slow-mowed it. We watched it in slow-mo, and you see the acceleration of the foot turnover. Like, when he started, I think what did we count in your first 15 feet, 5 yards? I think you took 14 steps. Right? Something like that, right?
I mean, a quick stutter step.
Yes,
it was
it's like Keith Byers.
The acceleration. Yeah, exactly. There's a Keith Byers. Now, the difference is it didn't cover much ground.
Right.
D. Gordon right there, you talk about acceleration. Like, in that final moment, that is the difference in my life experience of watching guys that run a 4.3 and guys that run a 4.5. Or a 4.7 or a 5 flat. But in particular, okay, and I've told the story before of Joey Galloway running a 40. It was the fastest human interaction I've ever had in my life, watching somebody run, and it was handheld in the 4.1s. And then there was a receiver named James McKnight, who was a world-class track guy. I mean, he was a collegiate high level, and he was low 4.4s, high 4.3s. But you just see the difference between right there. Okay, that's a 4.1, 4.2, 4.3 guy, and then there's everybody else. And that acceleration, how many guys in the league do do that. Buxton probably does.
A handful.
I mean, there's
the
maybe
most.
On one hand of those guys Billy that Hamilton accelerate the very end.
Very, very
to make that happen. That was insane.
Yeah, it was very shallow. Nothing surprises me with D. Gordon when it comes to speed. He wants to challenge it and show everybody he's the fastest man in the world, I think. So nothing surprises me. It was close. It was a really close play, but he was safe.
I love that, and I totally agree with Scott. I got the sense D was like, I got to show everybody I'm back.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. You missed me? Did you not think that I was an important part of this team over the last 10 days? Let me show you what I can do. I'm going to score on a fly ball to the second baseman just to show you what I'm capable of.
Yep.
And I love that about him. And I think that's a huge part of why this team has its grit, has its determination, has its resilience, its ability to take on some of his personality there. Let me show you what I can do here.
Yes.
That's a big part of it. But it's not the only part of it. The other thing that I think you got to see again last night
on 710 ESPN,
it is welcome here in Cut 7, is Nelson Cruz is back as well.
First pitch to Nelly. He swings and smokes this, no doubt about it. This is off the out-of-town scoreboard right above the Mariners' bullpen out in left field. Nelson Cruz, number 10, was destroyed. It is 3-0 Mariners.
High fastball, he just crushes that thing, clubs it out to left center field. And you've seen over the last week or so that once Nelson Cruz kind of gets back into a groove, which he had not been in, there's still quite a bit of violence and assault left in what he can do with a bat.
Yeah, it's called noise.
Yeah.
Jerry DePoto on yesterday with Danny, Dave, and more. Every week on the Jerry DePoto Show, as he joins the afternoon guys, cut number one here. Mike, it's just simply what your ears hear.
My sense is that what you've seen over the last 2 or 3 days is you're starting to see Nelson get healthy. And when he gets healthy, there's a pretty good chance it's going to get loud again.
Yeah, it got loud yesterday. I thought the question that leads to that is
it's a good cut, by the way. That's
it's a really good cut.
Yes.
And we saw it. I mean, we saw it down at spring training. Kyle had to walk away from the batter's cage because Cruz was in there with such violence.
That was a little
swinging the bat so hard and the balls crashing around.
It was a little disappointing.
Brock, you know that was
Kyle.
Don't even try to put that on me. You know that was
Kyle. I know it was, but it's like you with the bird, right? It's the same thing. Like, I get it, bro. You're a little scared of birds.
When it's fight or flight, I fly.
Yes, you do.
But I'm not sure why fight or flight took place when he was on the other side of a cage.
There were two.
He was on the other side of a cage, then a net, then a fence.
That's exactly
right. And it was still we got to go.
There were three barriers.
We got to get out of here.
Three barriers, bro. You're going to be fine.
Here's the good news. Is the question that came from was Wyman asking him, essentially, how do you know when a guy's done? And he was looking at Cruz and like, hey, how do we know? How has he been able to do this late in his career? And DePoto's answer, I think, was pretty important.
I do think that a lot of what has happened over the course of the first 2 months of this season with Nelson has much more to do with all of the nicks and bruises and the dings. He is like walking around like a human bruise right now. And it is anything from the ankle early in the season, late in the spring, to being hit by a pitch as frequently as anybody since Craig Biggio, it seems, and not simple hit by pitches. You know, getting it on the knob of the elbow 3 nights out of 4. It's taking balls that just shouldn't happen.
And it kind of goes back, when I hear that, Mike, it teases or ties into a little bit of what we talked about to open this show, that just numbers, just be very leery if you're going to live your entire life on numbers. Use it as a slice, a bigger slice. I mean, information now is king in so many ways, and it's been fantastic to watch new jobs and organizations and departments and organizations explode with data. I love data. I got a bunch of friends that are consultants that run data companies. I love it. You know, it's like Freakonomics. It's awesome. It's great. But if you just solely live on that and you think that's the end all be all and answer to everything, you miss out that Nelly struggled because of things you don't know. You don't know about the swollen elbow. Scott Servais and Jerry DePoto do. You don't know about the tweak in a groin. You don't know about some of the guys sick. You don't know what's going on at home with it. You don't know about those things. And that also bevy of information those people have in making decisions. And awfully nice when some of them come to light. And in this case, awfully nice when the human bruise starts to feel a little better. You saw it as he, you know, had the double the night before, actually running and diving and playing. And you see it with the explosion last night. And a number of his hits.
Astros win, so the Mariners remain a game behind. By the way, though, they are tied in the loss column. They have a couple games in hand. So Mariners tied in the loss column still for first place with the Astros. Angels lose yesterday. Yeah, I'm already scoreboard watching in May, now June 1st. Yes, that's right. I'm already scoreboard watching. Angels lose. So you get a 4.5 game lead over the Angels. And Tampa comes in. Yeah, Tampa's not supposed to be good this year. They're supposed to be tanking. But they're not bad.
No.
They're a game over 500.
Nope.
Who would have thunk that? I mean, they don't have a shot really in that division. A game over 500, and they are 10 games out in the AL East, where the Red Sox and Yankees are just running away with it. But at 28-27, you're going to see a pretty decent team come in here over the course of the next 3 days. So should be a fun weekend over at the ballpark. Looking forward to watching the Mariners. And by the way, just a quick tip of the cap last night to Wade LeBlanc again. He's become my second favorite
Mariner starter.
The
sixth best May ERA in the history of the franchise? That guy?
I like watching him just keep them off balance. And I would have guessed he'd have a good game against Texas last night. A bunch of fastball hitters, big guys, Guzman and Gallo and Mazar and those. I know Mazar hit a home run, but it's the old Jamie Moyer philosophy. The harder they swing, the slower you throw. And with a bunch of Rugnetto, Dor.
That's a great point, Mike.
It is. Well, those guys who just want to get out there and swing as hard as they can, find a way to keep them off balance.
Thankful for analysis like that. I'm serious, man.
It feels incredibly insulting.
It is not. I hope you all are thankful for that.
It's not enough. I got it from the president of our company yesterday.
What?
Then I got it from Steve Rabel. I will get you back one day, Rabes. And now I got to hear this from you?
No, I told you. I'm spending 3 hours appraising you. I'm tired of people dumping on you.
Doesn't feel that way.
Okay?
Nope, doesn't feel that way.
All right. Well, I'll do a better job then.
Let's talk about Russell Wilson's feet. We're going to do that. We haven't done it enough, and we're going to do it next on Brock and Salk.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42!
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Blue 42!
All right, let's get to a little Coors Light's Blue 42. It's three good football questions for Brock. A little aside before we get there, Brock.
Yeah, kid.
Every day we hear you make that play call on Coors Light's Blue 42.
Yeah.
Lydia and Kyle and I yesterday, along with some of the other folks from the station, were at the big induction into the Pacific Northwest Football Hall of Fame. Steve Rabel did a great job, and Matt Hasselbeck was inducted along with a couple other folks.
Yes.
And when Matt Hasselbeck was up there, he was talking about some of the plays he remembered from his time spent in the same West Coast offense you were in.
Yes.
And he gave a few more plays. He, of course, gave the same one you always
gave. Well, kind of, but he flipped it over. He went brown right, tight, close,
right.
A right, sprint right, G, U corner, halfback, flat. Because, of course, he's right-handed.
Right.
And mine was red, right, tight, close, C left, sprint left, G, U corner, halfback,
that's
flat.
Similar.
And, yes, my elbow's getting a little sore as I'm patting myself on the shoulder.
What were some of the other plays he called?
What did he call? I think he called a blue right. F short two jet flanker drive, and then he got to one, and that was a little more Zoran Holmgren West Coasty than I used to be in.
I got the sense that he knew more than you.
Probably he did it for 18 years.
I got the sense he knew more calls.
Probably
like he
three
felt
times
a little
more.
Like you have your two that you go
right
to, and I got the sense he had more.
Yeah, but the nice thing then is I can get to dice right slant blunt check with me alert quick game, and I can get to the indie stuff as well.
I like
whereas
that.
The majority of his 18 years were in one system.
I like that. Yeah. All right. Question number one for you. I guess that probably could have.
How great was that, though?
Three questions, 3 minutes. Let's go, boys.
Taking a dig at Holmgren. Like, I really appreciate all of this stuff you gave me with all those play calls and just how practical they've been in changing lives.
Question number one. What is Brian Schottenheimer? Why is he worried about Russell's feet?
Oh, this is good. This is good. Here was Brian Schottenheimer in his press conference, 2 days ago, talking about some of the fundamentals and mechanics they're working on with Russell.
Well, again, I always go back to fundamentals. I think obviously the skill sets that he has are tremendous. I think there's some things that we're looking at trying to do with his footwork and things like that. Just we're trying to hold him, in the details of some certain things that maybe he's never done. We're not going to force him to do anything that he doesn't like or doesn't feel good about. But he's been great in terms of trying things, and that's a starting point. Obviously, the fundamentals and the footwork and some of the different things timing-wise, maybe some route concepts that he hasn't run and how the footwork fits in.
And I think the last part was a little bit of like speed outs, like these 10 to 12, what we call the Okie back in the day, 24 double out, where you're going to hit your fifth step like they do at the combine, and you throw some of these speed outs to the sideline. They do it in quick game, but I saw a little bit more of that in practice than I've seen in the past. Specifically two things, and watch this come training camp time with Russell's feet, and we'll see if they're still working on it. Number one is when he gets done throwing, you saw this a couple times, he wants to see just his level of balance. So he's on his feet, and he's just kind of, you know, I don't know, not hopping, but he's just kind of making sure that he is so square on balance. And the second one is that when he is at the bottom of his drop, things just kind of slow down. He's not rushed. He's not stepping up. He's not flushing. He is just like, it's amazing how, and when you're as good an athlete as he is, how you can just kind of play at that tempo and still be so effective. Those are two things with the feet that jumped out to me.
All right, question number two. Brandon Marshall's contract details come out yesterday. They only owe him $90,000 guaranteed. Everything else is in either in incentives or in bonuses, etc.
Yeah.
So what do you make of it?
I like the deal a lot. I said to you, this better be a minimum deal that they can cut him at any time. And in essence, that's what it is. So his base will be $1 million. He'll get a $90,000 signing bonus. That's you know, pennies. That's the quarters and dimes in our car seats to these guys as far as their cap goes. And that's all on you, Brandon. You know, if you can get to 30 or 40 catches or 6 or 7 or 8 touchdowns, you're going to make another $1 million. So that's exactly the way I hope the deal was structured. It's different than Jerron Brown and some of the others. And even Janikowski, they got a $500,000 signing bonus. That's the contract I wanted to see, and that's the contract he ended up getting.
All right, quickly, question number three, more from Brian Schottenheimer, who we know wants to run the ball, but how will they run the ball?
With a whole lot more variety than we've seen in the past. We've talked about that. The practice that I saw an awful lot of play action. Here with Schottenheimer talking about it specifically in cut 10.
Obviously the running game, being physical, play action pass, but obviously here it always starts with always protect the ball. You know, the ball's number one. If you don't have that, again, you're going to hurt your chances to win. But we've always been best places I've been. We were able to run the football when people knew we were going to run it. We could throw the football when people knew we were going to throw it. And that just gives you that balance that you need to be successful.
Man, you know what I love more than anything? And Wyman was talking about yesterday on Danny David Moore. The Boomer Esiason put the ball out there, like extended on the outside stretch run, which they've done to a degree. But, man, were they doing it effectively the other day. And Russell is so good at it. His change of direction is as good as any quarterback, if not the best in the league. The size of his hands and the length of his arms and being able to show that ball and to create movement for those defenders with both eyes and body, busting their eye discipline. You're going to see a lot of that play action pass off of those plays, and I think Russell more adept at that than anything else in his own arsenal.
All right, that is today's Coors Light's Blue 42. It's our opportunity to talk some football with Brock every single day at 7:45. All right.
I didn't make a lot of sense with the footwork. That's an easier one to show in person. But like at the bottom of his drop, instead of like freaking out, you just see him slow down, like just slow down. Like your arm is strong enough. Your balance is amazing enough. You don't have to be rushed to do things. And the guy that was hurried more and hit more and pressured more than anybody in the league, making sure that clock is still slow and contained, a big part of this offseason.
I'm excited about the grouping of stories that we have coming up next. Chris Carson is going to join us at 8:30. But before we do it, we have the world's dumbest athlete. We have perhaps the world's most compassionate coach. And then we've got an old general manager taking shots. And I'm not really sure why. It's all next on Brock and Salk.